Chapter 33. Courage to Strengthen. Kneeling in just her shift, Egwene frowned at the dark green silk riding dress she had worn into the waist, which seemed a very long time ago. There was so much to do. She had given some time to writing a hasty note and rousing Kowinda from her blankets with instructions to leave it at the Longman in the morning. It said little beyond the fact that she had to go away. She did not know much more, but she could not just disappear without telling Gawain. A few of the phrases made her blush to remember. Saying she loved him was one thing, but actually asking him to wait. Yet she had taken care of him as far as was possible. Now she had to ready herself, and she hardly knew for what. The tent flap was thrown back, and Amice entered, then Bear and Cerulea. They stood in a line looking down at her, three faces stern with disapproval. It was very hard not to clutch the dress to her breast. In her shift, she felt very much at a disadvantage. In armor, she would have been at a disadvantage, a matter of knowing she was in the wrong. She was surprised it had taken them so long to come. She took a deep breath. "If you've come to punish me, I don't have time for carrying water or digging holes or any of it. I am sorry, but I said I would come as soon as I can, and I think they mean to count minutes." Amice's pale eyebrows rose in surprise, and a puzzled look passed between Cerulea and Bear. "How should we punish you?" Amice asked. "You stopped being a pupil the moment your sisters summoned you. You must go to them as Aes Sedai." Egwene covered a wince by examining the riding dress again. It had gathered remarkably few wrinkles for having been rolled up in a chest all these months. She made herself face them again. "I know you're angry with me, and you have cause."
"Angry?" Cerulea said.
"We are not angry. I thought you knew us better." It was true she did not sound angry, yet censure still painted all their faces, including hers. Egwene stared from one to the other, especially Amice and Bear. "But you told me how wrong you think what I'm going to do is. You said I must not even think about it. I said I wouldn't, and then I went ahead and worked out how to do it." Startlingly, a smile bloomed on Cerulea's leathery face. Her multitude of bracelets clattered as she shifted her shawl in a satisfied manner. "You see? I told you she would understand. She could be Aiel." Some of the tightness faded from Amice, a little more from Bear, and Egwene understood. They were not angry that she meant to try entering Telairun Riod in the flesh. That was wrong in their eyes, but you had to do what you felt you had to do. And even if this worked, it incurred no obligation except to herself. Not angry at all, really. Not yet. What dug at them was her lie. Her stomach fluttered. The lie she had admitted. Maybe her smallest lie. Another deep breath was required to prime her throat for the words. "I lied about other things, too. I entered Telairun Riod alone after I promised I would not." Amice's face darkened again. Cerulea, not a dreamwalker, only shook her head ruefully. "I promised to obey as a pupil, but when you said the world of dreams was too dangerous after I was injured, I went anyway." Bear folded her arms, expressionless. Cerulea muttered something about foolish girls, but it hardly sounded heated. A third long breath. This would be the hardest to say. Her middle was not fluttering anymore. It danced so hard she was surprised she was not shaking. "The worst of all is, I am not Aes Sedai. I'm only accepted. You might call me an apprentice. I will not be raised to Aes Sedai for years, if I ever am now." Cerulea's head came up at that, thin lips compressed in a hard line, but still none of them said anything. It was up to Egwene to make matters right. They could never be exactly as before, but... "You've admitted everything," a small voice whispered. "Now you'd better get on with finding out how fast you can reach Celidar. You can still be raised Aes Sedai one day, but not if you make them madder than they already are." Egwene lowered her eyes and stared at the colorful layered carpets, her mouth twisting with scorn. Scorn for that small voice,
and shame that it could speak in her head, that she could think it. She was going away, but before she did, she had to put matters right. It was possible, under Ji Ito. You did what you had to do, then paid the cost. Long months ago in the waste, Avienda had showed her how a lie was paid for. Gathering every scrap of courage she could find, hoping it was enough, Egwene put the silk dress aside and stood. Strangely, beginning seemed to make going on easier. She still had to look up to meet their eyes, but she did it proudly, head high, and she did not have to force the words at all. "I have to." Her stomach was not fluttering any longer. "I ask the favor that you will help me meet my to." Salidar was going to have to wait.
Leaning on his elbow, Matt examined the game of snakes and foxes laid out on the tent floor. Occasionally a drop of sweat fell from his chin, just missing the board. It was not a board at all, really. Just a piece of red cloth with the web of lines drawn in black ink and arrows showing which lines allowed movement only one way and which both. 10 pale wooden discs, each with an inked triangle, were the foxes, 10 with a wavy line the snakes. 2 lamps set to either side gave more than enough light.
"We'll win this time, Matt," Alvar said excitedly. "I know we will."
"Maybe," Matt said. Their 2 black-stained discs were nearly to the circle in the middle of the board, but the next roll of the dice would be for the snakes and foxes. Most of the time, you did not make it as far as the outer edge. "Roll the dice." He never touched the dice cup himself since the day he had given it to the boy. If they were going to play the game, it might as well be without his luck taking a hand. With a grin, Alvar rattled the leather cup and spilled out the wooden dice his father had made. He groaned as he counted the pips. This time, 3 dice showed faces marked with a triangle, the other 3 wavy lines. On their turn, you had to move the snakes and foxes toward your own pieces by the shortest path, and if one landed on the point you occupied, a snake touched Alvar, a fox Matt, and Matt could see if the rest of the pips had been played, 2 more snakes would have reached him. Only a child's game, and one you would not win so long as you followed the rules. Soon Alvar would be old enough to realize that, and like other children, stop playing. Only a child's game, but Matt did not like the fox getting him, and even less the snakes. It brought back bad memories, even if one had nothing to do with the other. "Well," Alvar muttered, "we almost won. Another game, Matt?" Not waiting for an answer, he made the sign that opened the game, a triangle and then a wavy line through it, then chanted the words, "Courage to strengthen, fire to blind, music to dazzle, iron to bind."
"Matt, why do we say that? There is no fire, no music, and no iron."
"I don't know." The line tickled something in the back of his head, but he could not bring it up. The old memories from the Tirangrial might as well have been chosen at random. They probably had been. And there were all those gaps in his own, all those fuzzy places. The boy was always asking questions he did not know the answer to, usually beginning with why. Darid ducked in out of the night and gave a start of surprise. Face shining with sweat, he still had his coat on, if hanging undone. His newest scar made a pink furrow across the white lines crisscrossing his face. "I think it's past your bedtime, Alvar," Matt said, pushing himself up. His wounds gave a few tinges, but only a few. They were healing just fine. "Put the board up." He stepped close to Darid and lowered his voice to a whisper. "If you ever tell about this, I'll cut your throat." "Why?" Darid asked dryly. "You are turning into a wonderful father. He shows a remarkable resemblance to you." He seemed to be struggling with a grin, but a moment later it was gone. "The Lord Dragon is coming into camp," he said, as serious as death. Thoughts of punching Darid in the nose vanished. Matt pushed the tent flap aside and ducked into the night in his shirt sleeves. 6 of Darid's men, in a circle around the tent, stiffened when he appeared. Crossbowmen. Pikes certainly would not be much good for guards. It was night, but not dark in the camp. The bright glow of a waxing three-quarter moon in a cloudless sky was washed out by the light of fires spaced among the rows of tents and men sleeping on the ground. Sentries stood every 20 paces all the way to the log palisade. Not the way Matt would have preferred it, but if an attack could pop out of the air. The land lay nearly flat here, so he had a clear view of Rand striding toward him. Not alone. Two veiled Aiel moved on their toes, heads swiveling every time one of the band rolled over in his sleep, or a sentry shifted his feet to watch them. That Aiel woman Avienda was with him as well, a bundle across her back, stalking along as if she would go for the throat of anyone who got in her way. Matt did not understand why Rand kept her around. Aiel women are nothing but trouble, he thought bleakly, and I've never seen a woman more set to give trouble than that one. Is that really the dragon reborn? Alvar asked breathlessly. Clutching the rolled-up game to his chest, he was almost bouncing. It is, Matt told him. Now get off to bed. This is no place for boys. Alvar went, muttering reproachfully, but only as far as the next tent. Out of the corner of his eye, Matt saw the boy dart out of sight. His face reappeared, peering around the corner. Matt left him alone, though after getting a good look at Rand's face, he wondered whether this was any place for grown men, let alone a boy. That face could have been used to hammer down a wall, but some emotion struggled to break through, excitement or maybe eagerness. Rand's eyes held a fevered light. He had a wide piece of rolled parchment in one hand, while the other stroked his sword hilt unconsciously. The dragon belt buckle glittered in the firelight. Sometimes the head of one of the dragons peeking out from his coat sleeves did, too. When he reached Matt, he wasted no time with greetings.
I need to talk to you. Alone. I need you to do something.
The night was a black oven, and Rand wore a gold-embroidered green coat with a high collar, but he was not sweating a drop. Dered, Telmanis, and Elysian stood a few paces away in various states of undress, watching. Matt motioned them to wait, then nodded toward his tent. Following Rand in, he fingered the silver fox head through his shirt. He had nothing to worry about, at least. He hoped he did not. Rand had said alone, but apparently Avienda did not think that applied to her. She stayed a firm 2 paces from him, no more and no less. Mostly she watched Rand with an unreadable face, but now and then she glanced at Matt, frowning and eyeing him up and down. Rand paid her no attention, and for all his seeming haste before, he showed none now. He looked around the tent, though Matt wondered uneasily whether he was seeing it. There was not much to see. Alvar had set the lamps back on the small folding table. The chair folded too, and so did the washstand and the cot. All were black lacquered with lines of gilt. If a man had coin, he might as well spend it on something. The slits the Aiel had made in the tent had been mended neatly, but they still showed. The silence dug at Matt. What is this, Rand? I hope you haven't decided to change the plan at this late date. No answer, only a look as if Rand had just remembered he was there. It made Matt nervous. Whatever Dered and the rest of the band thought, he worked hard at keeping clear of battles. Sometimes, though, being Tavirin worked against his luck. That was the way he saw it. He believed Rand had something to do with that. He was more strongly Tavirin, strong enough that at times Matt almost felt a pulling. When Rand put his finger in, Matt would not be surprised to find himself in the middle of a battle if he was asleep in a barn. A few more days and I'll be in Tyr. The fairies will take the band across the river, and a few days beyond that, we'll see us with Wyramon. It's too bloody late to go meddling.
I want you to bring Elaine to Camelin. Rand broke in. I want you to see her safe to Camelin, whatever happens. Don't leave her side until she's on the Lion Throne.
Avienda cleared her throat.
Yes, Rand said.
For some reason, his voice went as cold and hard as his face. But then, did he need reasons if he was going mad?
Avienda is going with you. I think it's best.
You think it's best? She said indignantly. If I had not wakened when I did, I would never have known you had found her. You did not send me anywhere, Randall Thor. I must speak with Elaine for my own reasons.
I am very glad you've found Elaine, Matt said carefully. If he was Rand, he would leave the woman wherever she was. Light Avienda would be better. At least Aiel women did not walk around with their noses in the air or think you should jump just because they said so. Of course, some of their games were on the rough side, and they did have the habit of trying to kill you now and again. I just don't understand why you need me. Jump through one of your gateways, give her a kiss, scoop her up, and jump back. Avienda fastened an outraged stare on him. You would have thought he had advised kissing her. Rand unrolled the large parchment on the table, using the lamps to hold down the ends. This is where she is. It was a map, a stretch of the river Eldar, and maybe 50 miles or so to either side. An arrow had been drawn in blue ink, pointing into forest. Saladar was printed beside the arrow. Rand tapped near the eastern edge of the map. That was wooded, too. Most of it was. There is a large clearing here. You can see the nearest village is nearly 20 miles north. I'll put a gateway through to the clearing for you and the band. Matt managed to turn a wince into a grin. Look, if it has to be me, why not just me? Make your gateway to this Saladar. I toss her on a horse and... And what? Was Rand going to make a gateway from Saladar to Camelin as well? It was a long ride from the Eldar to Camelin. A very long way, with only a snooty noblewoman and an Aiel for company. The band, Matt, Rand snapped. You and the whole band. He drew a long, shuddering breath, and his tone became milder. His face did not lose its rigidity, though, and his eyes were still feverish. Rand could almost believe he was sick, or in pain. There are Aes Sedai in Saladar, Matt. I don't know how many. Hundreds, I've heard. But I won't be surprised if it is closer to 50. The way they go on about the tower whole and pure, I doubt you'll see more. I mean to put you out 2 or 3 days away so they can learn you're coming. No point in startling them. They might think you were a White Cloak attack. They're rebels against Elida, and probably frightened enough that you won't have to do more than loom a little and say Elaine has to be crowned in Camelin to make them let her go. If you think they can be trusted, offer your protection. And mine. They're supposed to be on my side, and they might be glad of even my protection by now. Then you escort Elaine, and as many of the Aes Sedai as want to come, straight across Altara and Murindi to Camelin. Show my banners, announce what you're doing, and I don't think the Altarans or Mirandians will give much trouble, not as long as you keep moving. If you find any dragon sworn along the way, gather them in as well. Most will probably turn to bandits if I don't tie a rope to them soon. I've heard a rumor or two already, but you will draw them, flying my banners. His sudden grin showed teeth, but never touched those hot eyes. How many birds with one stone, Matt? You ride through Altara and Murindi with 6,000 men and draw the dragon sworn out after you, and you may hand me both countries. There was so much in that to set Matt's teeth on edge that he no longer cared whether Rand had 10 sore teeth and both boots full of cockleburs. Make Aes Sedai think he meant to attack them? Indeed not. And he was supposed to intimidate 50 of them? Aes Sedai did not frighten him, maybe not even 5 or 6 together. But 50? He touched the fox head through his shirt again before he realized it. He might just find out how lucky he really was. As for riding across Altara and Murindi, he could see it now. Every noble whose lands he crossed would swell up like a strutting rooster and try to peck him the moment his back was turned. If that Taviran madness came into it, he would probably find some lord or lady gathering an army right in front of him. He made one more try. Rand, don't you think this might draw Samael's eyes north? You want him looking east. That is why I'm here, remember? To make him look this way. Rand shook his head emphatically. All he'll see is a guard of honor escorting the Queen of Andor to Camelin. And that's if he learns of it before you reach Camelin. How quickly can you be ready? Matt opened his mouth, then gave it up. He was not going to budge the man.
2 hours.
The band could be booted and in their saddles faster, but he was in no hurry, and the last thing he wanted was the band thinking they were moving on the attack.
Good. I need an hour or so myself.
For what, he did not say.
Stay close to Elaine, Matt. Keep her safe. I mean, there's no point to this if she doesn't reach Camelin alive for her coronation.
Did Rand think he did not know about him and Elaine, canoodling in every corner of the stone the last time they were together?
I'll treat her like my own sister.
His sisters had done their best to make his life miserable. Well, he expected the same from Elaine, just in a different way. Maybe Avienda would be a little better.
She won't get out of my sight until I plunk her down in the royal palace.
And if she tries Mistress Snoodon with me too often, I'll bloody well kick her.
Rand nodded. That reminds me, Bertawin is in Camelin, with Varen and Alana, and some more Two Rivers girls. They're on their way to train for Aes Sedai. I'm not sure where they will do it. I am certainly not letting them go to the tower the way things are. Maybe the Aes Sedai you bring back will take care of it.
Matt gaped. His sister? Aes Sedai? Bode? Who used to run tell their mother every time he did anything that was fun?
Another thing, Rand went on. Egwene may be in Saladar before you. I think somehow they found out she's been calling herself Aes Sedai. Do what you can to get her out of it. Tell her I will get her back to the Wise Ones as soon as I can. She'll probably be more than ready to go with you. Maybe not, though. You know how stubborn she's always been. The main thing is Elaine. Remember, don't leave her side till she reaches Camelin.
I promise, Matt muttered. How under the light could Egwene be somewhere on the Eldar? He was sure she had been in Kyrian when he left Mehrone. Unless she had worked out Rand's trick with the gateways, in which case she could jump back any time she wished, or jump to Camelin and make a gateway for him and the band at the same time. Don't worry about Egwene either. I'll drag her out of whatever trouble she's in, no matter how muley she behaves.
It would not be the first time he had pulled her chestnuts off the hearth before they burned. Very likely he would get no thanks for it this time either.
Bode was going to be Aes Sedai? Blood and bloody ashes.
Good, Rand said. Good.
But he was staring intently at the map. He jerked his eyes away, and for an instant, Matt thought he intended to say something to Avienda. Instead, he turned away from her roughly.
Tom Marilyn should be with Elaine.
Rand produced a letter from his pocket, folded and sealed.
See that he gets this.
Shoving the letter into Matt's hands, he hurriedly left the tent. Avienda took a step after him, half raising a hand, lips parted to speak. Just as suddenly, her mouth snapped shut, and she buried her hands in her skirts and squeezed her eyes shut. So the wind came that way, did it? And she wants to talk to Elaine. How did Rand ever get himself in this pickle? Rand was always the one who knew how to handle women, Rand and Perrin. Still, it was no concern of his. He turned the letter over in his hands. Tom's name was written in a feminine hand. The seal was one he did not recognize, a spreading tree topped by a crown. What noblewoman would be writing to a leathery old man like Tom? Not his concern either. Tossing the letter on the table, he picked up his pipe and pouch.
Alvar, he said, stuffing the bowl with tobacco. Ask Talmanis, Nalisian, and Darid to come to me.
There was a squeak just outside the door flap, then,
Yes, Matt,
and the sound of scurrying feet. Avienda looked at him, folding her arms with a firm expression. He forestalled her.
So long as you travel with the band, you are under my command. I want no trouble, and I expect you to see there isn't any.
Should she start anything, he would deliver her to Elaine tied in a pack saddle, if it took 10 men to put her there.
I know how to follow, battle leader.
She punctuated that with a sharp sniff. But you should know that not all women are wetlander soft. If you try putting a woman on a horse when she does not want to go, she may put a knife in your ribs. Matt nearly dropped the pipe. He knew Aes Sedai could not read minds. If they could, his hide would have been hanging on a wall in the White Tower long since. But maybe Aiel Wise ones? Of course not. It's just one of those tricks women pull. He could figure out how she did it if he put his mind to it. He just did not care to put his mind to it. Clearing his throat, he stuck the unlit pipe between his teeth and bent to study the map. The band could probably cover the distance from the clearing to Salidar in a day if he pushed, even in that wooded terrain. But he intended to take 2 or even 3. Give the Aes Sedai plenty of warning. He did not want them any more frightened than they already were. A frightened Aes Sedai was almost a contradiction. Even wearing the medallion, he was not eager to learn what a frightened Aes Sedai might do. He felt Avienda's eyes in the back of his neck, heard a rasping sound. Sitting cross-legged against the tent wall, she was drawing her belt knife along a honing stone and watching him. When Elysian entered with Darrett and Talmanis, he greeted them with, "We are going to tickle some Aes Sedai under the chin, rescue a mule, and put a snip-nosed girl on the lion throne. Oh yes, that's Avienda. Don't look at her crosswise, or she'll try to cut your throat, and probably slit her own by mistake." The woman laughed as if he had made the funniest joke in the world. She did not stop sharpening her knife, though.
For a moment, Egwene could not understand why the pain had stopped increasing. Then she pushed herself up from the carpets of her tent and stood, sobbing so hard she quivered. She wanted very much to blow her nose. She did not know how long she'd been crying that hard. She only knew she felt on fire from the top of her hips to the backs of her knees. Standing still was a problem she barely mastered. The shift she had thought of as scant protection had been discarded some time back. Tears rolled down her face, and she stood there and bawled. Cerulea and Amice and Bear regarded her soberly, and they were not the only ones, though most of the rest were sitting about on cushions or stretched out, talking and enjoying tea served by a slender guyshine. A woman thanked the light. They were all women, wise ones and apprentices, women Egwene had told she was Aes Sedai. She was grateful that just letting them think she was did not count. She could not have survived that. It was the telling, the spoken lie, but there had been surprises. Kosain, a lean, yellow-haired, spine-ridged Miagoma, had said gruffly that Egwene had no toe toward her, but she would stay for the tea, and so had Astaire. Aeron, on the other hand, seemed to want to cut her in two, and Surunda. Trying to blink away the haze of tears, Egwene glanced toward Surunda. She was sitting with 3 wise ones, chatting and occasionally looking in Egwene's direction. Surunda had been absolutely merciless. Not that any of them had gone easy. The belt Egwene had found in one of her chests was thin and supple, but twice as wide as her hand, and these women all had strong arms. A half dozen or so strokes from each added up. Egwene had never felt so ashamed in her life. Not that she was naked and red-faced and weeping like a baby. Well, the weeping was part. Not even that they had all watched her strapped when not taking their own turns. What shamed her was that she had taken it so badly. An Aiel child would have been more stoic. Well, a child would never have had to face it, but the principle was the simple truth.
"Is it over?"
Was that thick, unsteady voice really hers? How these women would laugh if they knew how carefully she had gathered her courage. "Only you know the worth of your honor," Amice said flatly. She held the belt dangling at her side, using the wide buckle as a handle. The murmur of conversation had ceased. Egwene drew a long, shaking breath through her sobs. All she had to do was say it was done, and it was. She could have said enough after 1 blow from each woman. She could... Wincing, she knelt and stretched herself out on the carpets. Her hands went beneath Bear's skirts to grasp the woman's bony ankles through her soft boots. This time she would hold on to her courage. This time she would not cry out. This time she would not kick or thrash about or... The belt had not hit her yet. Raising her head, she blinked her eyes clear to glare at them.
"What are you waiting for?"
Her voice still shook, but there was more than a note of anger, too. making her wait on top of everything else? I have a journey to make tonight in case you've forgotten. Get on with it. Amice tossed the belt down beside Egwene's head. This woman has no toe toward me. This woman has no toe toward me. That was Bear's thin voice. This woman has no toe toward me, Cyrillia said forcefully. Bending, she smoothed damp hair from Egwene's face. I knew you were Aiel in your heart. Do not be overproud now, girl. You have met your toe. Get up before we think you are boasting. Then they were helping her to her feet, hugging her and wiping away her tears, holding a handkerchief for her to finally blow her nose. The other women gathered around, each announcing that this woman had no toe toward her, before adding her own hugs and smiles. It was the smiles that were the biggest shock. Saranda beamed at her as brightly as ever. But of course, toe did not exist once it was met. Whatever earned it might as well never have happened. A bit of Egwene that was not wrapped up in Jito thought that maybe what she had said at the end helped, too, as well as getting back down in the first place. Perhaps she had not faced it with the indifference of an Aiel in the beginning, but at the end Cyrillia was right. She had been Aiel in her heart. She thought a part of her heart always would be Aiel. The wise ones and apprentices left slowly. Apparently they should remain the rest of the night or longer, all laughing and talking with Egwene, but that was just custom, not Jito. And with Cyrillia's help she managed to convince them that she just did not have the time. At last it was only her, Cyrillia, and the two dreamwalkers. All the hugs and smiles had slowed her tears to a trickle, and if her lips still trembled no matter what she did, she could still smile. In truth, she wanted to cry again, if for a different reason. Partly for a different reason. She was on fire. I'm going to miss all of you so much. Nonsense, Cyrillia snorted for emphasis. If you have luck, they will tell you you can never be Aes Sedai now. Then you can return to us. You will be my apprentice. In 3 or 4 years, you will have your own hold. I even know the husband for you, my great daughter Amarin's youngest great son, Tarik. He will be a clan chief one day, I think, so you must watch for a sister wife to be his roof mistress. Thank you, Egwene laughed. It seemed she had something to fall back on if the hall in Salidar did send her away. And Amice and I will meet you in Tel Iran Riod, Bear said, and tell you what we know of events here and with Randall Thor. You will go your own way in the world of dreams now, but if you wish it, I will still teach you. I do wish it. If the hall let her anywhere near Tel Iran Riod. But then they could not keep her out. Whatever they did, they could not do that. Please keep a close eye on Rand and the Aes Sedai. I don't know what he is playing, but I am sure it is more dangerous than he thinks. Amice said nothing about more teaching, of course. She had given her word on a course of action, and even meeting To did not erase that. Instead, she said, I know Ruark will regret not being here tonight. He has gone north to look at the Shido for himself. Do not be afraid your toe toward him must go unmet. He will give you the opportunity when you meet once more. Egwene gaped and covered by blowing her nose for what seemed the 10th time. She had forgotten all about Ruark. Of course, nothing said she had to pay her obligation to him in the same way. Maybe her heart was at least partly Aiel, but for a moment her mind sought frantically for another method. There had to be one, and she would have plenty of time to find it before seeing him again. I will be very grateful, she said faintly. And there was Milane, too, and Avienda. Light! She had thought she was done with it. Her feet kept shifting no matter how hard she tried to hold still. There had to be another way. Bear opened her mouth, but Cyrillia cut her off. We must let her clothe herself. She has a journey to begin. Bear's thin neck stiffened, and Amice's mouth turned down. Clearly, neither liked what Egwene was going to try any more than before. Maybe they meant to stay and try talking her out of it, but Cyrillia began muttering only half under her breath about fools who tried to stop a woman from doing what she thought she had to do. The younger pair straightened their shawls. Bear had to be 70 or 80, but she certainly still was younger than Cyrillia, gave Egwene a farewell hug, and left with murmurs of, "May you always find water and shade." Cerulea waited only a moment longer. "Think on Tarek. I should have asked him to the sweat tent so you could see him. Until you can, remember this. We are always more afraid than we wish to be, but we can always be braver than we expect. Hold on to your heart, and the Aes Sedai cannot harm what is really you, your heart. They are not nearly so far above us as we believed. May you always find water and shade, Egwene, and always remember your heart." Alone, Egwene merely stood for a time, staring at nothing and thinking. Her heart. Perhaps she did have more courage than she thought. She had done what she had to here. She had been Aiel. In Salidar, she was going to need that. Aes Sedai methods differed from the wise ones in some respects, but they would not go easy if they knew she had called herself Aes Sedai. If they knew. She could not imagine why else they would summon her so coldly, but Aiel did not surrender before battle was joined. With a start, she came to herself. "If I'm not going to surrender before fighting," she thought wryly, "I might as well get on to the battle."